This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Among the hurdles in moving from welfare to work is affordable childcare. Bridge has examined the options in Michigan for low-income families looking for childcare and preschool for young children. Staff writer Nancy Derringer wrote the story called Michigan's Low Investment in Childcare Costs State and Poor Children Alike. Nancy Derringer, thank you for speaking with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
So we have a couple of different issues that are at the core of childcare, and this paragraph in your story sums it up pretty nicely. At a time when Michigan is looking to move more low and moderate income people into the workforce while closing the achievement gap for their children, Michigan's low investment in childcare can be a daunting obstacle for struggling families. So for those struggling families, how big an expense can childcare be?
Oh, it can be enormous. I think I looked up some data that said that for a top quality, which is to say 5 stars under the state rating system, facility for, say, 2 children in care, it can be almost 40% of a working parent's wages at the income threshold that we allow them to enter the program. And that probably requires a little bit of explanation.
Yeah, let's hear that. How does the funding mechanism work so that someone could maybe get some state or federal assistance?
Okay. This is a federal program that is administered by the states, and it's a pretty familiar kind of arrangement. There's a block grant that is distributed to the states with a general framework on how it can be distributed, but an awful lot is left up to the states, who then can put in some of their own money. It's largely federally funded, but there is some state money, and they have control. The state has control over who gets into it. And there are 2 big criticisms of Michigan's program. One, it's only open to the very poorest workers. It's set, they have a threshold of 125% of the federal poverty line, which for a family of 3, say a single mother and 2 children is, it's in the low to mid 20,000s, basically. So you have to be very, very poor to get into it. And then the other criticism that you hear is we don't reimburse the childcare providers very much. And so they're supposed to do market rate surveys and they're supposed to give something that's adequate. But again, this is one of these things where it has a history of reimbursing at kind of babysitting wages, and that's what it does. Although you have to be a pretty generous babysitter to accept some of the hourly rates that Michigan offers.
And how is Michigan then comparing to other states which are under the same program, of course, under the same federal guidelines?
Right. Well, not very well. If you look at the chart that ran in our story, we have one of the lowest, I shouldn't say that. I guess it would be a high barrier to get into the program, which is to say you have to be very, very poor. And then we don't reimburse that much. And so, you know, other states, for instance, and it's difficult because the federal government offers, their guideline is people who receive this benefit can make up to 85% of state median income. But that's not always the way the cutoff is determined. So you end up balancing percentage of state median income against percentage of federal poverty level, and it can get a little confusing. But to give you an example, I think we are the second lowest in the nation in terms of getting into the program. You basically have to be only the poorest people to get into it. But then, you know, you look at other states like Alaska, for instance. You can make up to $54,000 a year for a family of 3 to get in. That's 74% of the Alaska state median income. Hawaii, Maine. If you look at how Michigan expanded preschool in the last few years, the Great Start Readiness Program, they opened it up to parents making up to 250% of the federal poverty line, which gets you up into moderate income territory. But at the same time, that is still a very big expense that a family you know, making or in the 40s or 50,000 can really use a lot of help with.
Our listeners have become familiar with this issue through the work of Tim Bardick, who works at the Upjohn Institute in Kalamazoo. He's written a couple of different books on high-quality preschool. Is high quality here necessarily, though, what we're talking about, or is it getting kids into some sort of a safe childcare environment? How much does education, play into this when we're talking very young children?
Well, I think it's both. You know, if you've ever raised a baby or taken care of a very young child, you know that, you know, they don't need to be in a classroom. They don't need to be, you know, sitting in a semicircle around a teacher singing songs. It certainly doesn't hurt them. But, you know, they're sponges at that age. And 0 to 3, we are realizing now, is a very critical time for a young child's intellectual development. Maybe that sounds ridiculous. Their brain development, shall we say. And so, you know, we not only need these kids to be in safe, dependable, affordable care so that their parents can go to work, but we also need them getting the best possible start they can so that when they go on into preschool and later on into regular school, they're ready to learn with the kids who have had a better start.
And that's that sort of second part of that paragraph in terms of closing the achievement gap between the children who are coming from lower income families and those who are coming from more well-to-do families.
Exactly. And that's exactly what this program would offer both. It would be a way for their parents to be able to go to work and not worry so much and not have to do the kind of catch-as-catch-can childcare arrangements that many of us are familiar with, and then also make sure that their kids are being read to, are well-educated, are being, responded to by a responsible adult, that there's people that they can trust and they can love, and that helps them as they start their education.
You quote from a policy memo that came from the Michigan League for Public Policy in 2014, finding that the number of low-income Michigan parents receiving publicly subsidized child care had dropped by two-thirds between 2005 and 2014. So that's tens of thousands of fewer children actually in the program. What is the best guess or best estimate we can make about what happened to these kids?
Well, there are a number of factors, and my next story will get into one of these, which is part of it is there was an audit of this program done in, it was done over a course of a couple of years, but it was released in 2008. And what it showed is that the Michigan State Department of Human Services was not exercising proper oversight over this program, and they found just kind of some lacks. There were caregivers working in this program who had criminal records. There was not enough verification that people were actually working. There was not enough verification that little Timmy was actually in care at the time. And so it was something of a little bit of a bombshell. And it, what it did was led to some tightening of oversight. And so they started to lose kids about that time. However, you may recall that something else was going on in 2008 and in 2009, which was that
the financial crisis was cratering. Yeah.
Exactly. The economy was cratering. The people were leaving the state in droves. So I think it was the combination of greater oversight, which led some providers to probably say, this isn't worth it. I'm not doing this, along with people leaving the state with low-income jobs being lost, you know, the kind of people who would qualify to take them. And so it was probably a combination of factors. You know, this was 8 years ago, but the numbers have not really begun to recover until the last year or so. And they think that's probably because they've been tweaking the exit threshold to the amount of money that you can make to stay in the program. They've been steadily raising that. So even though you have to be very, very poor to get into the program, you can make a little more money and still stay in the program, which is good. So you don't have that, oh, oops, you got a raise, sorry, no more no more subsidy. And so that's kind of bringing the numbers up. But it's probably a combination of the audit, the economy, the increased oversight and training that was required just led a lot of people to say, you know, what am I doing this for? It's just, you know, they're not even paying my sitter $2 an hour and just getting out.
There was pretty bipartisan support for the idea of increasing money for the Great Start Readiness Program.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sort of support across party lines for the idea of boosting some of the money that goes into this reimbursement for preschool or for childcare?
I didn't get a sense of that, but I have a feeling that there is going to be perhaps a push in the future to adjust some people's thinking about this. At the time, a four-year-old is a preschooler, and they're going to start kindergarten the next year, right, when they're five. And I think it was easier for lawmakers to see this as something that is absolutely worth it. Zero to three is just a matter of kind of enlarging your thinking to see, okay, if this was good for four-year-olds, it's probably going to be good for three-year-olds and two-year-olds and even younger. And so I believe that if it is pitched to the legislature the right way, if there is a little bit of extra money that can be shaken loose so that we can bring down some more federal money, the match that you have to come up with, I think that could happen. And I really wish it does happen because we're really seeing this achievement gap open at an appallingly early age for some of these kids. And it's not just, you know, they're not just at or low income. They're also what's considered at risk. You know, they live in a house where their parents don't speak English, for example. And, you know, you just don't want to see a kid start falling behind before they even know what school is. And that's what we risk doing by not supporting this program a little bit better, I think.
So you noted you've got another story coming up on this. What else might we look for from Bridge on the issue of child care in Michigan?
Well, I think our next piece is going to mention this audit and a little bit of the history, but we're also going to look at the business case for child care. There are employers who are realizing that kids happen. and if you want to have good employees, you need to acknowledge that children happen. And that you need to help them out a little bit when you can. There are a lot of corporations that have developed, you know, flex time policies, job sharing policies, you know, any way that a good employee can kind of get through those early years before their kids start school and even after. It's similar to what we would call probably, you know, the cafeteria benefits that we are now more familiar with. It started in the last few years where we might say, okay, Nancy, you are in your 50s and your daughter is in college, so you don't have a need for daycare anymore, but maybe you have an aging parent and you might need flex time for that. So it's kind of a shop for your benefits as your life changes kind of situation. But it is, I think I talked to a couple of employers that say, you know, this is one of these things where if you want good workers, we have to acknowledge, because the olden days of the, you know, stay-at-home mom and the one parent working is just, you know, that's a tiny fraction of American households now, and it's getting smaller every year. But we still want them to have kids. So we need to acknowledge that.
Nancy Derringer, thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Nancy Derringer is a staff writer for Bridge. Her story called Michigan's Low Investment in Childcare Costs, State and Poor Children Alike, can be found at bridgemi.com and through a link at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.